Today I'm in box with Dorothy Hejela and Virish Hejela. But normally they are Reba's mum and dad to me, so thank you for letting me interview you today. That's great. So the first question is, where did we first meet?
We met when we came down to Reba's 50th birthday.
Yes.
That was the first time I think we met.
Mm-hmm. Which is, yeah.
It was about...
7 years ago? No.
Reba's 64, about 4 years ago.
Four years ago. And then we went out for dinner, didn't we, after Zara's...
That's right.
We went out to dinner in Brussels, was it?
In Bath,
yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And yes. And then we went to your house and had lunch, had an evening meal when Ian was home as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, we kind of...
We met a few occasions.
Many occasions, yeah.
And so the next question for both of you is, do you drink tea?
I love tea, yes. Yorkshire tea.
You're not the only person who's said to me,
Yorkshire tea.
What's your favourite cup of tea?
Well, mine would be, I like Assam tea, but otherwise it's Yorkshire.
Yeah, Assam or Darjeeling, the two teas are quite like.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So the next question, which is the big question that I'm asking everybody, is how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I think it is at the moment. I think it really is sleeping in a lot of ways. I think you've got a different generation growing up, whereby I think that when we were growing up, Sunday was a day when you were first that you got ready and you put on your best clothes and you went to church. And now I think the whole society has sort of changed. You know, all their activities are at the weekend and... you know, parents are, you know, working 5 days and 6 days a week, and probably that's the only way they can catch up with things. Yeah. One thing I do notice as well is that when we were children, the churches were open all the time. Now, of course, unfortunately, because there's a lot of vandalism, that isn't so. But, you know, people sometimes, if they've been grieving or something like that, you know, just to pop in there and just sit for a few minutes or... You know, I find it quite strange, yeah.
I mean, we're really lucky here in that three of our four church buildings that we own are open during the day all the time, and people do go in.
Yeah. Well, that's quite nice. That's nice to hear that, yes.
One of them, mainly because everything that was valuable has previously been stolen from it.
But, I know.
But that's fine. We don't mind that. We want people to be able to come in and have that space.
Yes. Yes, I think that's it.
Mm.
Yeah. That's all I could think about. It's,
I gave you three special questions.
Right.
Because there were special questions for you
guys. Yeah.
What has been the impact for you both and your children of being a mixed faith family?
Well, let me start with that, because... After we got married, we did discuss the question of religion quite seriously. At that time, my intention was to go back and settle in India. And if that was the case, children would have been brought up as Hindus.
Mm-hmm.
Hence their names. But they're all Hindu names. But when we decided to return back and settle in the UK, I thought they must have religion. And at that time, there were not many Hindu available to bring them up as a religious group, if you like, or in the religion. So now they must follow the Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all baptized and they all went to school, all went to Sunday schools. And until they left to school, left home, they all went to church quite regularly.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that changed.
And that's changed since that time for whatever reason. Our eldest daughter, she's now become a very devout Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very involved with the church. So things are different.
Yeah.
But at least they were brought up with some religion, some religious instruction. and requirements at that stage.
Mm. I don't go to church now, but I mean, it doesn't say I'm not a Christian, because I don't, you know, I can still be a Christian without popping in. But I find that that part very sad amongst the family, very sad. But it's one of those things that you have to accept, you know. I found it, when we first got married, we did have an opposition from both sides, and but we realised, as both of us, we just had to, if we wanted this, we had to fight for it. And it was something that we knew we'd have obstacles, we knew everything, we knew, you know, the whole thing. But, you know, we just had to battle on. I mean, we had prejudice with people, because in that time it was very difficult. You're talking nearly 60 years we'd be married next year, and it's a long time. Mm. And in those days, you know, to marry from another society or whatever, it was never looked on, you know. So I think we battled on, and I think that the children, I think they may have had one or two, you know, rubs up about things like that. But and I don't think marriage, in any marriage, it's a bed of roses. But I think that we've shared everything and talked about things. And I think that it's a relationship where you've got to both work together. And I think you have to work out extra hard.
Another aspect is that I think it's taken us some few years, but it is all differences both sides of the families.
Yes.
And we've got on extremely well with the rest of the family on my side and Dorothy's side.
Yeah.
And it's still continuing to do so.
Yeah. Which they thought would never last when
and
we first got married.
My brothers are now, two are in the States. One has died now, and the others in Mumbai. And the families are all scattered. But because I made sure that they all met each other as cousins at some stage, Reva knows most of her cousins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And after that, it's up to them whether they want to continue or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Two of the cousins, they're very close. In fact, they visit each other for holidays and things of that kind, even though they're so far apart. So these things are what we worked at. But I think we tried as best as we could.
I think one thing is important as well with the Indian society is that the respect that children give to their parents and their grandparents, and we found that with our grandchildren, you know, the way they dote on us, you know, they really do, and I think it's lovely, you know, just to watch this. You know, I do, I think it's, that's one aspect of it, I think it's lovely. Yeah.
So you're both medical professionals. So my next question was, has your faith informed your practice as medical professionals over the years?
I'll start with that. You see, Hindu religion is a very different religion to most. It's a more a way of life. In fact, you don't have to go to a temple for prayers either. You do your prayers yourself. And the way the things are observed, quite a lot of them are customs and practice, rather than, in fact, the religion. So religion is mainly the way of life, how you treat yourself, how you treat your others. And like most religions, it is the right things to do. And I think that's what is required for medicine. Yes, I think it's certainly been that way.
Yeah.
I had to be honest with myself, honest with my patients, and honest with all the staff. Treat them with equal respect, and think they're all equal. And I think that's helped me a great deal, because I was one of the first people who started this concept in the hospital, and from cleaners upwards. They're all invited to meet once a month, and anybody could bring up anything they want without saying, he's a top boss, he shouldn't be listening to us. And surprising how many good things came out from all levels of staff. Observed something which wasn't right, which nobody in the hierarchy had ever noticed, and once they were put right, it was a lot better for everybody around.
Yeah, I agree with that, yes. Definitely true. Yeah. think you were the first Indian that they had in the hospital, weren't you, when you first arrived?
At that time.
Mm-hmm. And we do things this way and we do things that way. And, you know, it was a sort of thing, you follow the guide, but of course he had his own way of dealing with that. I thought it was very good.
Mm-hmm. And as a Christian, was the hospital that you were part of from a Christian foundation originally, or
no?
I think hospitals always had a lot of Christian ethics.
Yes,
because we always had the visiting
clergy.
Christmas was observed quite strictly. In fact, one of the roles of consulting was to go on the Christmas day, and I took all my family with me.
Mm-hmm.
To carve the turkey on each of the wards.
Yes, we did that. Mm-hmm.
So all morning was spent
doing that.
Going around the hospital wards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing applies to a lot of religious festivities and things are observed.
Mm-hmm.
But those things are gradually now gone.
We still have the vicar coming in to the Christian people. We had the Catholic people. We had Jewish people coming in. You know, all types of things like that.
But at one time they used to have proper prayer in the concert hall and things. But those things are gone.
But there is the only thing is you can see now available is a prayer room for the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
It's a prayer room. It can be used by all faiths.
It is, but it's mainly used for the Muslims, isn't it? Yeah.
Is there still a Christian chaplaincy as well though?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. I haven't seen that one in our society now.
What I find is when I'm trying to when people go into hospital, they assume that the chaplain's going to go and visit them, and it's taken me a while to say to people, if I don't know that you're in hospital,
I
can't visit, and I also can't refer you to the chaplains, and I do try. If I know I'm really busy and people are at hospital locally or further away, I do say I phone the chaplaincy department and then make a referral, and they're very good.
We didn't hear that question this time. We've both been in hospital recently. But in my time, one of the things we used to ask all patients, would you require to see your chaplain or vicar?
Mm.
That question has not been asked of us for many years now.
No, never. And I was very, very ill about 5 years ago.
Right.
And then
I remember, on the other hand, Dorothy's mother, when she was very ill, she was brought up as a Catholic, but then she married Dorothy's father, and that faith was badly shaken.
Mm-hmm.
He refused to.
When she was dying, I knew she would like to see the priest, and arranged for it, and she was very, very relieved to see him get the last rites.
I think what had happened was my father forbid her to carry it on as well, because when they did get married, the vicar said to the priest, turned around and said to my mother, you've made your bed in hell, you've got to lie on it. And really upset my mother, you know, very much. And it was very, very sad, very sad. She had a hard
life. Well, I think if you've got any input, that might be worth suggesting to the hospitals. That they ask about religion, they ask about all sorts of things, social side of things, but they do not ask, do you want to visit from your vicar?
Yeah.
It's strange that they don't do that. I will raise that. One of my friends is a specialist geriatrician in Swindon, and she is very hot on encouraging people to refer to the chaplaincy.
I was a geriatrician too.
So,
and that is one of the things I made sure they're all asked.
I think so. It's as I say, you don't see it, but you see, if the Muslim is dying, I'm not decrying the Muslims, but if one of those, you'll have everybody around them, you know, they're all over the place. But somebody's like that, and they're on their own.
I think it needs just slightly better communication.
I think it does, definitely. Yeah.
I was struggling for a third question, this is what I came up with. What is your big hope, medical or otherwise, for the UK for the next 10 years?
Oh.
I'll let you get on with it. I'll say my piece after.
Don't know about medically.
Okay, I'll start with that. I think
I've seen
one of the things that's got to happen is the politicians must come clean with it. They know they cannot fund the false health service as it is.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, it's become a sacred cow, and nobody can turn around and say, let's raise finances this way. And the easiest method would be, like in France and other countries, they have their medical insurance, they have a state benefit, but they all have got to contribute something at the point to deliver your service.
Mm-hmm.
And I think unless that happens, UK finances and NHS will never, never recover.
It won't, it'll drown.
Doesn't matter how much, if it's free at the point of being given, with no thought as to how much is being spent on the person, everybody belongs the whole pudding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there is even a little input that I've got to go and see my doctor, I've got to give him £5 for the visit, whether it costs 50 or 100, doesn't matter. But that £5 is coming from your pocket and it's staying there.
Mm-hmm.
That will certainly cure a lot of ills to the health service.
And people, if they've got a dog or a cat or something, they fork out when they go to the vet.
Mm.
But when it comes to medicine, and they don't realise how much these pills cost. This is
the thing. Prescription. I get free prescriptions, I'm elderly.
Mm.
But I can certainly buy my own pain relief tablets and things of that
kind. Paracetamol and things like this. You shouldn't be on prescription.
But yet that paracetamol, which costs you £1 to buy, it costs health service about £10.50 because the prescription charge plus the chemist fees add on costs about 10 times.
Mm. Did you have something else to add into that, Dorothy?
I agree entirely with what he's saying. I think that the whole, you know, I think when we're going into Brexit, which is quite frightening, I wonder how things will alter because, you know, there's so many changes that are taking place in the hospitals and with medicine. I worry very much about how things will alter in the next 10 years. Well, we won't probably be around, but I think for the younger people, definitely.
Mm.
And I think they will have to think of it in an alternative way. Mm. Definitely.
So we're going to go on to the last question for today, for both of you, which is, what is your favourite thing that begins with T?
I think mine's a telephone. I think because a telephone will keep me in touch with, especially if I was on my own or wherever I am, I think it's a way of contacting people, a way of keeping me in touch with my family and my friends, and it's a lifeline to me. I feel that, yeah.
Good.
Mine has been travelling, but I'm not sure how long that will continue.
I guess the travelling has been, obviously you travelled here and you've travelled back home, but you've been to lots of other places as well, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been to many, many countries and, you know, always loved
travelling. Yes, we love travelling.
And so is my son. He is, as a student, I think he had travelled more than many students I knew.
Yeah. Mm. Always alone, he always wanted to travel on his own.
And he's upgraded, he did the backpacking when he was a student.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's doubled business class and stays in hotel.
He slept in cow sheds. He slept in Oh dear.
So that's the end of my questions. So thank you very much for having a cup of tea with me today. It's been lovely to speak
it's
to you.
It's very nice to talk to you. Yes.
I hope something good comes out of it for you.
I do, yes.
Thank you very much.